Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to a brand new edition, a brand new week of Drive Time Sports right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to start off a brand new week, especially this time of the year. You know, the months December, January, they're fun. There's so much to recap, so much to dissect, especially during the NFL playoffs. We had a terrific weekend of wildcard football, and I just hope that the divisional round can give us the intrigue and the drama that we saw this past Sunday. We will talk, this Sunday and Saturday, I should say, we will talk a lot about all four games a little bit today on the show, and we'll also talk about the college football national championship, because that will be decided tonight as Alabama once again meets up with Clemson. So plenty to get into as far as the national sports front. Let's take a look at some of the headlines. That's what we'll start with today, and we'll begin with college football. Dwayne Haskins, who was one of the front runners for the Heisman Trophy throughout the majority of the year, had a couple of down games in the middle of the season that prevented him from being in the conversation with Tua and also Kyler Murray. But he has announced today that he will enter the draft. He's considered to be the clear top quarterback in this class. Justin Herbert, who many thought would be a top five pick this year, quarterback out of Oregon, he has decided to stay for his senior season. And so Haskins, he's going to go pro. And I have to think that the two announcements, it's kind of a domino effect, right? In his first year as a starting quarterback, Haskins was marvelous this year. Like I said, a couple of down games, but for the most part, he was fantastic. Threw for 4,800 yards and 50 touchdowns to only 8 interceptions. He announced this decision on Twitter today, thanked his teammates, he thanked his coaches at Ohio State. Again, finished third in the Heisman voting. He was pretty good at the Rose Bowl. Pretty good. Finished 25 of 37 for 251 yards and 3 touchdowns. Did not throw a pick as Ohio State topped Washington. And what impressed me about that is there is some NFL talent in that Washington secondary. This kid can play football, and to me, there's no question he will be the number one quarterback selected in the upcoming NFL draft. That's the top headline so far today. How about this one, though? Hunter Henry of the Los Angeles Chargers. He has been activated, and he may, in fact, play against the New England Patriots. This is interesting to me. He could see some action. To make room on the roster, the Chargers put Jatavis Brown on the season-ending IR with an ankle injury. I don't know if Hunter Henry's going to play on Sunday. According to Stephen A. Smith, he's had just a huge factor. He's been a huge factor for the Chargers all season long. But May, he tore his ACL on his right knee. He was put on the PUP list. And he started training on December 17th, started the 21-day practice window for him to return to the field. The team had until today to either put him on the active roster or on the IR the rest of the season. Again, I don't know that he plays, to be honest with you. I know that he is a solid. Look, I'm not saying anything negative about Hunter Henry. I love the guy. And you definitely want him on your team. But what I will say is I don't know if you need to mess with anything right now, because it is clicking. And as far as predictions for the NFL playoffs, I'm always hesitant with the Chargers because I've been burned by the Chargers in the past. Never have I felt less confident about the Patriots' chances in a playoff game against Philip Rivers as I do this year. Because what we saw in the first half yesterday from the Chargers, that team can win the AFC. Now, what we saw in the second, I shouldn't even say second half, what we saw in the fourth quarter, that team would get spanked at Foxborough. So I really, it's a Jekyll Hyde type thing with the Chargers. Antonio Gates, he's been fine for the Chargers this season. He has. And when you take a look at what the Chargers, what else they have at the tight end spot, Virgil Green has been fine as well. Looking at the playoffs, Virgil Green, he didn't play a huge factor yesterday. Antonio Gates did. He had 4 catches on 4 targets. It's another offensive weapon. If you see Hunter Henry, it is going to be minimal at best. Now, if the Chargers get past the Patriots, you may see them work him in little by little, a little bit more. But to me, I think it's great news. I hope we see him at some point in time. I just wouldn't expect a lot from him in the divisional round. Let's take a look at some of the other headlines, and here's some hot stove talk for you in baseball. I know we're still waiting to figure out where Manny Machado and Bryce Harper are actually going to land, but this is a very big deal in the National League. Madison Bumgarner, stud pitcher for the San Francisco Giants. And to me, if you know, we talk a lot about the Giants on the show because Bill Lasky, our Major League Baseball insider who covers the Giants, has talked a lot about Matty Bumgarner. He is now on the trade block, and there's discussions going on between the Milwaukee Brewers and the Giants. He could end up going to Milwaukee. This would be huge. He's an unrestricted free agent next winter. $12 million, that's it for 2019. It's such a valuable trade chip. The Giants, they were 16 games under 500 last season. They need to rebuild. They bring in Farhan Zaidi from the Dodgers to be the president of baseball operations. And really, when you take a look at the way this guy wants to run things, you chop salary. Now, Bumgarner only bringing $12 million next year, only costing $12 million next year, it's a bargain. But if he's not in your long-term plans, this is a golden opportunity for the Giants to start that rebuild. Last season, he was 6-7 with a 3.2 ERA. The problem is he's had some injuries. He didn't make his debut last year until June because he fractured his finger. The Brewers, they win the NL Central last year. They went to Game 7 of the NLCS before losing to the Dodgers. And they were done in by a rookie in Walker Buehler. I have to believe that that series is different if the Brewers have Madison Bumgarner in the middle of that rotation. And if he's just slightly healthy, if he's not even a full season, if he's good for, say, 3/4 of a season, this guy will, in fact, make the difference in Milwaukee, in my opinion. If I'm the Brewers and you don't have to give up anything substantial right now that you project on your 25-man roster, I think you do it. I think you go all in. I don't know that they re-up Bumgarner at the end of the year, but to me, it's can't miss at this point. You got to make sure you scarf him up before someone else in the NL does. I think he's the piece that would put you over the top as far as the rumored options available in the National League from a pitching standpoint. That's the trade talk going on right now in Major League Baseball. How about the College Football Hall of Fame class? Boy, this is star-studded when you take a look at it front to back. Vince Young is at the forefront of the College Football Hall of Fame. It also features Notre Dame returner and receiver Rocket Ishmael and Ole Miss linebacker Patrick Willis, who will both participate in the coin toss tonight in the College Football National Championship. Other members of the class, which was announced this morning, include Terrell Buckley, Ricky Dixon, John Carroll, London Fletcher. I mean, it's just a loaded, loaded Hall of Fame class. Darren McFadden is another one. Jake Plummer, Troy Polamalu, Joe Thomas, Lorenzo White. It's an awesome class, and it is, again, led by Vince Young and, of course, Rocket Ishmael and Patrick Willis. You know, I was talking with someone over the weekend about the greatest college football players that I have ever watched. And my list is a little bit different, I know, than most. Man, Vince Young had one of the most incredible individual performances I've ever seen at any level when Texas beat USC in the national championship. I got to throw Tommy Frazier in there. I throw Lamar Jackson. I think Lamar Jackson's one of the top 10 greatest college football players I've ever watched. What he did at Louisville was magnificent, and he'll never get the pub for it because of where he went to school. Kind of a more of a low profile. 1-1 Heisman. His stats improved the next season. Louisville had to win a national championship for him to get 2 consecutive Heismans. But Rocket Ishmael's got to be up there. To me, that's one of the greatest heists in Heisman history. Ty Detmer getting the Heisman over Rocket Ishmael. To me, he's one of the greatest college football players of all time. And Patrick Willis, well, his history speaks for himself. That's a star-studded class. You got to love it. College football, man, it's just the best. I absolutely love it. Let's take a look at the schedule tonight in the NBA, and we will begin in the 5 o'clock hour. We get San Antonio at Detroit. Brooklyn will travel on the road to meet Boston. Those two games in the 5 o'clock hour. It is a short slate. Tonight we get Denver at Houston, 6 p.m. The Utah Jazz will travel on the road at 6 to take on the Milwaukee Bucks. Live coverage of that game will begin right here at 5:50 tonight. We get Memphis at New Orleans at 6 p.m. The Lakers travel to meet the Dallas Mavericks at 6:30. 8 o'clock tonight, it's Portland playing host to New York, and in the nightcap, Orlando at Sacramento. That's a quick look at the national sports front. Again, coming up on the show today, we are going to be joined by Coach Lynn Tuttle of the Emory Lady Spartans. I caught up with Coach Tuttle Friday after Drive Time Sports went off the air. We had a great interview talking about Emory's 2-0 start. They blasted through the Richfield Wildcats in a rematch of last year's 3A state championship tournament. So we'll talk to Coach Lynn Tuttle. We'll break down all the action yesterday and Saturday in the NFL, and we'll talk college football and the national championship game tonight. It's all straight ahead on this Monday edition of Drive Time Sports. We are live from the Auto Farm Studios. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And we will begin with high school basketball, where Saturday night the Emory Spartans completed the season series sweep over the Carbon Dinos with a 107-57 dominating victory at the Spartan Center in Castle Dale. The Spartans were led in the game by Kyson Stilson, who scored 26 points and knocked down 5 shots from beyond the arc. Senior Brody Tuttle chipped in with 17 points. He also knocked down 5 three-point shots. Brax Jensen scored 16, and Cade Brazier finished with 10. The Dinos, on the flip side, were led by Caleb Nelson. He finished with a team-best 19 points. Colin Lewis poured in 17. The Dinos were without 2 senior starters in Derek Hillam and also Ty Anderson. As Emory methodically pulled away in the first half, they led 47-30 at the end of the first half. The second half was a complete domination. Emory outscored Carbon 34-12 in the third quarter and 26-15 in the fourth. Both teams will look to continue the region portion of the schedule this week. Carbon, who is currently 1-3 in league play, will go toe-to-toe with the Union Cougars Wednesday night at home. Emory, on the flip side, who was 0-2 in region play, will look for their first victory against the Manti Templars. You will be able to listen to both these games. Carbon, of course, will be on KRPX 95.3 The Peak, while the Emory Spartans will be on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We'll have more on both teams in the coming days. We move over to junior college basketball. And Saturday night, the USU Eastern Lady Eagles opened up the 2019 conference schedule with a massive victory over Colorado Northwestern, 88-60 in front of the hometown crowd. USU Eastern opened up in dominating fashion with a 12-0 run, and they never looked back. In the second quarter, the Eagles put their foot on the gas against the Spartans, outscoring them 26-6. As a team, the Eagles shot 46% from the field and 29% from deep. In the second half, USU Eastern continued to hold momentum despite being outscored in the fourth, 24-21. Leading the Eagles in scoring against the Spartans was freshman guard Emory Wagstaff, who finished with 17 points along with 6 boards. Freshmen Noah Harris and Lamia Korich chipped in with 15 apiece and 8 rebounds off of the bench. The Lady Eagles will look to continue their winning ways when they return to the court on Saturday to take on the College of Southern Idaho. The USU Eastern men's basketball team also picked up an important victory on Saturday night. They too opened up conference play with an 82-75 win over Colorado Northwestern. After being on the road for 2 months, the Eagles finally played in front of the hometown crowd. It started off rough in the first half. The shorthanded Spartans took advantage of the mistakes made by the Eagles and pressed USU Eastern throughout the night. With starters Augie Panovic and Blaze Neild in foul trouble early, the Spartans were able to grab a lead in the first half and hold on until halftime. The second half belonged to USU Eastern as they found a way to pick up the win. Blaze Neild, who had foul trouble throughout the game, did score 22 points and accumulated 3 rebounds while handing out 9 assists. Colorado Northwestern's guard Greg Martin led all scorers with 27 points. The Eagles' win on Saturday gives them a 13-6 record overall and a 4-1 home record. They, too, will return to the court on Saturday to take on the College of Southern Idaho. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
Hello, sports fans.
Time for sports.
Let the games begin.
Turn on the radio.
It's time to talk high school basketball on the Coach's Corner.
We'll talk high school basketball today on the Coach's Corner. Right here on Tribe Time Sports, live from the Auto Forum Studios. Last week, the Emory Lady Spartans, they looked pretty good, jumping out to a 2-0 start in Region 15 play. as they earned victories over South Sevier and then also over Richfield. Richfield was a rematch of the 3A state championship last year. The Lady Spartans picked up a 27-point win. Richfield did lose a little bit, but at the same time, that's a very talented basketball squad. This week, the Lady Spartans will continue. They'll take on Manti tomorrow on the road, and then they'll return home Thursday and go toe-to-toe with North Sam Pete. Friday, we caught up with Coach Lynn Tuttle. Unfortunately, it was after Drive Time Sports had gone off air, and so I'm going to replay that interview for you right now. This was an interview done Friday with Coach Lynn Tuttle talking about the Emory Lady Spartans, who were fresh off of a 61-34 win over the Richfield Wildcats. Coach, it's a pleasure to get you on. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Jordan.
Absolutely, Coach. The start of the second half of the season, it's worked out quite well for the Emory Lady Spartans. Once you get past that Christmas break, and I know the new year, it seems like things really ramp up. And now we're full swing into region play, Coach. Two wins to start off the league slate. A big one against South Sevier at home, 65-41. South Sevier, a much improved basketball squad. And then a rematch of last year's 3A state championship on Thursday, picking up a 61-34 win over Richfield. Things have gone well so far for this team.
Yeah, they have. The way the schedule played out, I was a little bit nervous. Coming back the day after New Year's, not really having a great chance to prepare for either team, where it's a moratorium you have to respect. And then meeting up with South Sevier and then back-to-back the next night with Richfield. Definitely had a concern, but I was real pleased at how the team come out and performed. They, right from tip-off, took off and never looked back in either game.
We'll start by talking about the South Sevier contest. In that game, Megan Jensen goes for 28 points. And, Coach, it just seemed like that's really the first time this year that Megan had a true dominating performance on the offensive side of the basketball. She's floated around that 19 to 20 point mark, but, I mean, a 28-point performance, that's impressive. And that's a little bit more of, I think, what everyone has expected out of Megan.
Yeah, it is. Preseason, we matched up with some of the better teams we matched up with. Packed it in real well on her, and she struggled a little bit. But meeting South Sevier, especially early on, they tried to just kind of single her up with another individual. And then after she caught the ball, then they'd bring help, and it was a little bit too late. You give Megan a chance to catch, steal the defense, and go with flow, make a move. She's pretty tough to stop. Definitely a great performance against South Sevier.
Kinley Toomer in this game goes for 15 points, 10 rebounds, also accumulates 5 steals. Coach, she's got a couple of double-doubles now on the season, which is so rare for someone playing out of the backcourt to accumulate multiple double-doubles, with rebounds being one of those categories. But at the same time, one of the things that I just don't think gets a whole lot of pub, especially throughout the state when I talk with other media members, if it's Kinley or if it's Caselyn, they float around the triple-double mark because they're accumulating 5 to 6 steals per game, which again is unheard of. So we know we're going to get points out of them. We know we're going to get the rebounds out of them, but it's the assists and the steals category that I think get overlooked.
Yeah, it is. They do a very good job at it. They're everywhere on the floor. As far as basketball IQ, both of them have an extremely high one. Defensively, you mentioned the steals. They go with the flow of the game and they understand what's going on and they look ahead and see what's going to happen next. And that enables them to be in a position to get them steals. And then as far as assists, they both see the floor very well, especially Kinley. She's been that way since a freshman. Definitely, and as an opposing team matching up against her, it's difficult to prepare for Kinley.
Coach, looking at the way the girls performed against South Sevier, what was the preparation like, knowing that you didn't have a lot of time because you had the Christmas moratorium? I know there's a couple of days in between Christmas and New Year's that you can actually, you know, get together, get in the gym, and then after that, once again, you can't have any interaction with the girls. So what was the preparation like for that game?
Well, after the moratorium, we was able to get in the gym on the 27th, and We were able to put 2 or 3 days in preparation for South Sevier. South Sevier's got their strengths. One of their true strengths is when they get down, if they go in their 1-3-1 half-court trap, it affects the opposing team extremely. But they actually tried that against us, and it only lasted about 2 or 3 possessions after mainly Kinley reads the opening and distributes the ball well, and we convert pretty easily on it. And then they got their other strength. So we was able to prepare for South Sevier My big concern, we never looked at Richfield at all because you never want to overlook the next game on your schedule. So my concern was last night. And then having the back-to-back games after exerting so much energy against South Sevier, we actually come out last night and was extremely pleased with their effort and how they performed.
We'll talk about that game right now. Richfield, 19-12 at the end of the first quarter. Richfield managed to stick within striking distance until the third quarter. Coach, what was the biggest difference between the first, second, and third quarters in this contest?
Well, it's like I mentioned to the girls, we're definitely a better ball team than them. They're going to come out, give us their best effort for 4 or 5 minutes of the first, and if you can just keep with their tempo and their pace and slowly climb away, it might knock a little bit of air out of them come second quarter. And then third quarter, same thing. They go and make adjustments during halftime. They're going to come out and give us their best shot for maybe a quarter. And same, just encourage the girls, stick with it, stick to our game plan, press forward, and just continually climb away. And if that's the case, and it was last night, then it surely makes the game much easier in the fourth.
Again, we're being joined right now by Coach Lynn Tuttle of the Emory Lady Spartans. Coach, we'll fast forward to the games on January 8th and January 10th. Got to go on the road to Manti. Got to play host to North St. Pete next Thursday. I mean, really is the first go-around of region play. It's kind of the midway point. I know it's such a bigger region than some of the others, and it's a little bit of a different schedule. There's really no slowing down for this team, and there's not really a stretch where you got to play a lot of games on the road or a lot of games at home. It's kind of like alternating from here on out.
Yeah, it is. The upcoming games, the Manti, they're down a little bit. Mount Pleasant, they're struggling early and well all through preseason. My main concern is going over there and not playing down to the level of the opponent we're playing, at the same time trying to improve everything that we need improvement on. We've got a few areas in our game that still need improvement. I feel like we're getting to the point kind of now where we left off last year, but I still see bigger things for this team in the future. So the teams next week, you know, it's going to give us an opportunity to work on them things that we need improvement on.
Has that ever been a problem with this group of girls as far as getting them to play to their, you know, not play down to their competition, Coach? Is that something that has ever been an issue?
Not really with them. A time or two, we come out a little sluggish and slow, thinking we don't need to perform because we're against a lesser opponent. But this group of girls, they usually get up for it. They're raring to go and haven't had much problem with it and don't expect it.
Again, as I was pointing out, it's all region play from here on out, Coach, and there's not a lot of time in between games. It's typically Tuesday and Thursday every which week. So does the regime change for you as a coach now that you know what the set schedule is? It's a little bit more in a routine compared to what it was during the non-region season. Does anything change at all?
Not necessarily. I mean, preseason, main reason, it's to get your girls in shape. I feel like at this point, we're in pretty good shape. We've been in probably better shape than the teams we have met in the last probably 3-4 weeks. Now it's the games will continually keep us in shape. We get about a day, like you mentioned, in between games to prepare for the upcoming game. And we get in a routine where, whether it's game film or just walk through what the other team's strengths are to try to prepare for it. But not going to change much as far as preparation, depending on what team we're up matching up against.
Coach, last question before I let you go. As far as the girls coming back and making sure they're in basketball shape and on the injury front, I mean, is this team still clear at this point in time in the season?
Pardon me?
Is this team still clear as far as injuries and in basketball shape goes? I mean, are you happy with where the girls are at right now?
Sure, yep. Injury prone, we haven't suffered anything major yet. So we've got a few on the bench that suffered some sprained ankles and stuff. It's slowly coming back. But as far as the first 5 or 6, accident-free. And, yeah, knock on wood. Hopefully we can keep going that way.
Coach, it's always a pleasure to get you on and talk a little bit about the girls and their dominating performances that you guys seem to churn out each night. Best of luck against Manti North St. Pete, and I know we'll see you next week.
Hey, thanks, Jordan. Appreciate it.
Again, that's Coach Lynn Tuttle of the Emory Lady Spartans. joined us Friday after Drive Time Sports to talk a bit about last week's games and also what lies ahead this week. Always great to catch up with Coach Lynn Tuttle. We've got a break for just a moment. Plenty more coming up here on Drive Time Sports. We'll recap the craziness of the NFL wild card rounds, and we'll look ahead to tonight's college football national championship as Alabama takes on Clemson. It's all straight ahead here on this Monday edition of Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
In 5, 4, 3, 2.
I'm Joe Wade Formicola, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Real name, no gimmicks.
On 750 AM, KOAL.
So I came to the grave. Real name, no gimmicks. That's why I ain't got no.
We're back on Drive Time Sports. KOAL, 107.3 FM, 750 AM. I want to transition from the local sports over to the national side. We had a wild, wild card Saturday and Sunday. I thought the football was just fantastic. I absolutely loved it. I will say this. If you're a Chicago Bears fan, you're hurting today, and I get it. But I feel bad for Cody Parkey. And while it's simple and it's easy to say the Bears lost this game because Parkey could not connect on a 43-yard field goal, at the same time, that's too simplistic for me. It's too simplistic. Yes, if Parkey connects on that field goal, the Bears move on. But there were several problems in this game. And I'm seeing a lot of similarities from what happened to the Bears to what happened to the Rams last season. Okay, now bear with me on the similarities here. First off, Nagy, I thought, did a tremendous job. I mean, the Chicago Bears this year in Vegas, I believe their over-under win total was 6.5. They traded for Khalil Mack. It went up to 7.5. Okay, they win 12 games. They went 7-1 at home this year. That's a good football team. But I felt that Nagy was outcoached yesterday. I did not like the offensive structure from the Bears. I thought at key times in this game, Doug Peterson was overwhelmingly better than Nagy. And that's to be expected. You have one coach who has won a Super Bowl. You have another coach who's a first-time head coach. And I felt that was the same problem with the Rams last season. I felt that Sean McVay was badly outcoached, overwhelmingly outcoached, as the Rams lost to the Falcons. A team that overachieved, a team that got into the postseason, got to play host to a playoff game, and they floundered. And I put the Chicago Bears in that same exact situation. Now, we'll see if the Rams learn from those mistakes this upcoming weekend. I do believe that the Bears will learn from those mistakes. So many similarities. The Rams had Aaron Donald, one of the best defensive players in the game. Flip side of that, the Chicago Bears, they have Khalil Mack, one of the best in the game. Mitch Trubisky had not played a lot of football. Second year. Jared Goff last year, second year. So many similarities. The Bears will be back. But here's why I look at this game and I say, you can't just blame Cody Parkey. I get it. He missed a crucial kick that could have extended the season, but he was 3-for-3 leading up to that point. And without him converting on those three previous field goals, the Bears are not in that situation. I'll take it another step further. The Philadelphia Eagles scored their first touchdown in this game, trailing 6-3, in the third quarter when the Chicago Bears had 10 players on the field. Whose fault is that? Are we going to blame that on Cody Parkey? I'm not saying that Philadelphia doesn't score on that play if Chicago has 11 guys out on the field, but it's a little bit more difficult. This Bears defense, phenomenal. You can make the argument best defense in the league. They had a fourth and goal when all they had to do was stop the Eagles one time. That's it. Your defense versus their offense. Best defense in the NFL. They stifled the Los Angeles Rams at home, one of the most high-powered offenses in the league. They stifled them. They dominated them. I take my chances on that. Win a playoff game if you can get a stop on fourth down. And you knew what was coming. Eagles run it on first down. Incomplete pass on second and third. You know what's coming on fourth down. Again, this is a defense that has stifled many opponents. Couldn't get a stop. Fourth down and two, Nick Foles to Golden Tate. Speaking of Nick Foles, I get that he is a Super Bowl winning quarterback, but at the same time, he is a backup. He's a backup quarterback that finds ways to win. He orchestrates a brilliant offensive drive to put the Eagles in a position to get a win. You could not stop Nick Foles. Not Cody Parkey's fault. I thought Nagy was outcoached. I thought the defense, who you rely on, that's your identity, came up short, obviously, and they made mental mistakes. The Bears weren't ready for the moment yesterday. And a veteran Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagle team that went 9-7 in the regular season, they were. And they took advantage, and they got the win. No question to me that Parkey makes that feel. And by the way, the luck. Let's not forget that that kick was blocked. Screwed up the trajectory of the ball, hits the upright, hits the crossbar. Just bad luck all the way around. Don't blame Cody Parkey. It's that is too simplistic, and if you're a Chicago Bears fan, and I'm talking a real Chicago Bears fan, you know that's not the only reason why your team lost that game yesterday. I feel bad for Parkey. I doubt he's on the roster next season. I doubt he's in the NFL next season. Wasn't his fault. Chargers-Ravens. The weirdest playoff game I have seen in quite some time. The Chargers were dominant. That was a pathetic offensive performance for Lamar Jackson through three quarters. John Harbaugh probably should have went to Joe Flacco. He didn't. And that's why I'm not an NFL coach, because he made the right choice. By the time you get to the fourth quarter, I don't care that the score was 12-3 and the offense had, I think it was like minus 13 yards in the third quarter passing. It was horrible. And that was a terrible performance. You do more damage to your future quarterback. He needs reps. It's a different situation. Flacco's not in your long-term future. You roll with Lamar Jackson. You don't put any doubt in his mind. I thought Harbaugh handled it right. And in the fourth quarter, Lamar Jackson was pretty good. He orchestrates a couple of touchdown drives, and the Ravens had a chance to somehow win this football game. And the Chargers, for as great as they have looked throughout the season, Melvin Ingram was unbelievable yesterday. It looked like he was going up against a college pass block. He just dominated. For as dominant as the Chargers were for three quarters, I still have doubts about this team. I don't know that I trust this Chargers squad going into Foxborough for reasons that I saw in the fourth quarter. And if we're being honest, Charger fans aren't going to agree with me on this. Replay got it wrong. I felt that Melvin Gordon fumbled that football. Replay at the one-yard line. Now, Baltimore picked it up and scored. It wouldn't have mattered because the play was blown dead. But as Gordon extends that football, it didn't look like he had control in his left hand with the ball. Chargers got away with one. And even if it was the right call, and again, I don't believe it was, but even if it was the right call, they still put themselves in a situation once again in the postseason to come up short. I don't trust this team. And then I take a look at the statistics. Tom Brady in the playoffs, coming off a bye, 11-1. 11-1, that's tough. And I know this Patriot team's nowhere near to what we've seen in the past. But things work out for the Patriots. And I'm not so sure that I can trust this Chargers team just yet. I think this is Phillip Rivers' best chance to win a Super Bowl. And I think it would be great for the Chargers to win a Super Bowl. And the reason I say that is because they're an afterthought in L.A. Even after winning a playoff game, they're the first team to win a playoff game in L.A. since both the Rams and Chargers moved back. They're still an afterthought. They need it. They need success in the postseason, much more than the Rams do. I'm rooting for the Chargers. Don't trust them. Phillip Rivers at times in this game, Phillip Rivers was not great yesterday. And I have been a guy that has backed him up through and through, 22 of 32, 160 yards. It's not great. That's not enough to beat the Patriots. You got to be a little bit more efficient than that. I don't know that I trust this team moving forward. The Indianapolis Colts, here's my assessment there. They continue to be the most disrespected team in the NFL, and I would not want to play that team. I would not be surprised if the Colts knock off the Chiefs. We know Andy Reid's track record in the playoffs. It's not great. This Indianapolis team is clicking. Andrew Luck is playing some of his best football. Marlon Mack was incredible on Saturday. And I knew Indianapolis was going to win this game. They dominated. Dominated the first half. That's all they needed. Marlon Mack averaged over 6 yards per carry. When Andrew Luck has that type of support coming out of the backfield, he is going to pick you to pieces. Chiefs better figure out a way to slow down Marlon Mack. Because if they don't, it's going to be a very long day. I could see the Colts winning that game. I would not be shocked. And by the way, Darius Leonard, who has become one of my favorite players in the league, I love this kid, 13 tackles, leads the team once again. He's the real deal. Not on the Pro Bowl, though. Didn't get a Pro Bowl nod. The Colts, the most disrespected team in the NFL. Cowboys, Seahawks. According to this show, the Cowboys are the most disrespected team because I haven't bought in. I believe now. I believe because the Seahawks, to me, well, one of the top rushing squads in the league, and the Cowboys shut them down. I'm a little bit surprised that really there was only 24 rushing attempts in this game, and it wasn't if Seattle had to play down. Right? It wasn't like they were playing from behind the majority of the game. Didn't quite understand that. Russell Wilson was Russell Wilson, 18 of 27, 233 yards. I believe he had one touchdown, no picks. I love the guy. One of my favorite players in the league to watch. Dak Prescott was a typical Dak team, but it's Zeke. And that's how you beat the Dallas Cowboys. To me, it's simple. You stop Zeke Elliott. You stop the rushing attack of the Dallas Cowboys, and you will beat this team. Problem is, Rams can't stop the run. Worst in the league, averaging 5.7 yards per game. That's what they're giving up, 5.7 yards per carry. Zeke Elliott's averaging 5.7 yards per carry. Could be a long day for the Rams. Cowboys may be going to the NFC title game. And Amari Cooper just continues to do Amari Cooper things. 9 targets, 7 catches, 106 yards. I was wrong on the Cowboys. Got to give the Cowboys some respect. They have gone further than I thought they would go. I did not think they would beat the Seahawks. They did. And typically when a team, it doesn't matter who it is. I mean, don't forget, Dak Prescott's been in the league just as long as Jared Goff, who the Cowboys will be going up against. He's got something under his belt that Jared Goff doesn't. That's a playoff win. He will be more loose on this game on Saturday. Cowboys are dangerous. My assessment of this weekend. Team I would not want to play, Indianapolis. Team that continues to just fall on clouds, Philadelphia Eagles. Team I don't trust, Los Angeles Chargers. Team I got to start giving more credit to, Dallas Cowboys. We've got a break for just a moment. We'll come back, put the final touches on this edition of the show. We'll talk national championship tonight, Bama-Clemson. It's all straight ahead.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM, 750 AM. I wanted to talk about tonight's national championship, but there's two stories breaking in the NFL that we have to talk about. First off, the Green Bay Packers have their new head coach, and on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm giving it a 10. The Packers have hired Tennessee Titans offensive coordinator Matt LaFleur as their next head coach. It was first reported by Ian Rappaport of NFL.com. It's not official yet, but they're finalizing a deal as we speak, and we'll bring in Travis Anderson. Travis, I don't know about your thoughts. I think the Packers knocked this out of the park. I think they got the next young, great offensive-minded football. And if I'm a Packer fan, I would be elated with the announcement of this hire. And I don't know if you agree with me. Your thoughts?
I like it. He was on Sean McVay's staff. He was the wide receiver coach there. On Sean McVay's staff.
He was offensive coordinator, basically.
Yeah, this is the new direction of teams are going, that young, you know, type of coach. So I like it a lot. I think you can't waste Aaron Rodgers' prime years anymore. I mean, it's time to win. This guy's going to come in, and they're going to win immediately.
Well, I also think you have to look past Aaron Rodgers at this point, because Aaron Rodgers, time is dwindling on his career.
He probably has 4 years left?
At the most. So you have to start looking beyond that. And the thing that I love so much about Matt LaFleur is he's earned his stripes in a very short period of time. I've followed this guy for a very long time. He was a quarterback's coach at Notre Dame back in 2014. Before that, he was with the Washington Redskins. So he left the Redskins, he went to Notre Dame, and then he took over as the quarterback's coach in Atlanta. And I always thought that Matt LaFleur did not get the credit for the MVP-type caliber season that Matt Ryan had. That was Matt LaFleur.
Yeah.
And we've seen what has become of Atlanta since Matt LaFleur left, right? They've gone downhill. He was so responsible for so much more than he got credit for in Atlanta. And then you look at the Rams. He left the Rams and went to Tennessee because while he was the offensive coordinator, Sean McVay's the offensive coordinator in LA. But I give Matt LaFleur a ton of credit in the success that we have seen in Jared Goff. Again, we give McVay all the credit in the world. LaFleur deserves a lot of that. He goes to Tennessee. This team is within one game of making the playoffs. The offense at times this season I thought looked good. I did not think it would be a long time for him to be a head coach. And I think the Packers knock it out of the park.
I think the Packers do a good job of getting their man. I know there was a lot of talk with Josh McDaniels. I'm glad Green Bay passed on him. Because
no retreads.
No retreads, yeah. So they go out and get a young guy who's going to be a first-year head coach. So I like it. I like it a lot.
You know, we talk about the list of coaches, a short list of coaches. And yeah, you can throw Mike McCarthy's name out there. You know, you can throw all the retread names out there. It's time for a new wave of coaches. That's where the success is coming from. Fresh ideas. And I think that you're going to get that with Matt LaFleur. I love it. I think the Packers are, I think they knock it out of the park. 10 out of 10. Best possible hire. I think they improve. They got a new vision. I think it's going to keep Aaron Rodgers happy. And I think LaFleur will be the head coach for the Packers past Aaron Rodgers' tenure. Elsewhere, it's also being reported by Jay Glazer of Fox Sports that Cliff Kingsbury is interviewing with NFL teams.
Interviewed with the Jets today. I think the Cardinals are on the docket as well. So Len Swan unblocks Cliff Kingsbury, gives him permission to interview as he blocked him over the weekend, which is a bad look for Len Swan and USC.
Look, Cliff Kingsbury's not going to coach at USC. He's not going to be there. And the reason I say this is because, again, we're looking at young minds. Cliff Kingsbury's a young offensive mind, and that's the route that the NFL is going. It was actually looking as if he had resigned as coordinator.
He was going to resign just for the fact that he could take these interviews, which, Len Swan, that's wrong. To block somebody from trying to get a job in the NFL, that's wrong. And that's wrong on Len Swan and USC. Shame on them.
I don't know what the interview process was like, though. I don't know if Cliff Kingsbury walked into the USC athletic department, interviewed for the offensive coordinator job, and Len Swan said, if we give you this job, and Clay Helton said, if we give you this job, you're not interviewing for any other job. You will be here next year, and he agreed to that? Then no, it's not. I don't know what the meetings look like. Now, I agree with you. You shouldn't block him from, you should not block him from interviewing, but at the same time, it's a crucial stretch for USC. So I don't know what the interview process was like. I just don't see Cliff Kingsbury coaching a down at USC. I don't see it happening now. There was way too much, and I think it was premature for him to take the SC job to begin with, because remember, the Rams wanted him.
The Rams wanted him to bring him in this year, so I don't blame Cliff Kingsbury at all for taking. You have to improve yourself as a coach, and when the next step of improving is getting to the NFL. So if I'm the Jets or the Cardinals, I take a hard look at it because, like you said, no retreads. It's time to go with fresh new minds, and as being a Jets fan, I wouldn't mind them hiring Cliff Kingsbury. I wouldn't.
No, well, and look at it this way. It makes sense that he interviewed for the Cardinals and Jets job, right? Because who did the Cardinals use a first-round pick on this last year?
Josh Rosen.
Who did the Jets use a first-round pick on this past year?
Sam Darnold.
He's an offensive-minded coach whose terminology, I think, translates from college to the NFL. The philosophies translate very well. He's a quarterback's coach. I can see no other teams in the NFL that should take a harder look at Cliff Kingsbury than the Cardinals or Jets. It just makes sense. And with the idea that he was told, no, you're not going to interview for these jobs, and then he did, to me, he's never coaching at USC. It's never happening.
No.
I don't know what he has done at USC. I don't know if he really has a foot in the door at USC. But again, it falls back on Len Swan. It falls back on Clay Helton. That dude's time is doomed at SC.
Yeah, Len Swan messed up heavily bringing him back. They should have fired Clay Helton when they had the chance this season after the Notre Dame game. They didn't, and this is why USC's in this mess.
Yeah, he's done. This is just another setback for a USC program, and again, it's a crucial stretch. I just don't see Kingsbury coaching at all at USC. Hey, we are just about out of time. Unfortunately, we didn't talk about the national championship game tonight. We'll recap it tomorrow, but will this be the best Bama-Clemson game that we have seen so far?
I think this game has all the meanings of being one of the greatest of all time, yes.
Who you taking?
I'm going Clemson.
I'm going to go Bama, but I take 6 points.
Yeah,
I believe the spread is still 6, right?
6 still. I hate picking against Nick Saban because that guy's the greatest college football coach of all time, but My gut feeling says Clemson.
I think Clemson with Dexter Lawrence. Dexter Lawrence didn't, and I guess his absence wasn't really noted in the Notre Dame game. Bama's not Notre Dame. These are the two best teams in the country, bar none. And I think you will see a little bit of a miss in Dexter Lawrence tonight. Can Clemson attack the middle of the field? That's where the weakness is for Alabama. Travis Etienne, what kind of game does he have? If he goes over 120 yards tonight, Clemson wins. Because he's got to alleviate some of the pressure off of Trevor Lawrence. So if Etienne can get over the 120-yard mark, Clemson gets the win. I think it's that simple. Both defenses are spectacular. Who can establish something offensively? Clemson gets 120 out of Etienne, they win the game. That's my prediction on it.
No, I agree with you 100%. I think that that's going to happen, and I think Clemson gets the best of Alabama this time around.
We'll talk about this game tomorrow on the show. I want to thank Coach Lynn Tuttle for joining us earlier on as well. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.